I think sometimes we feel that discomfort and we think we've got to get away from it. And it essentially, then we get stuck, right? We're either then saying, I can't be in relationship with you, or one of us has got to change their minds. It may be the case that you can live with that for longer. And you see that, right? That you see that in the Gospels where Jesus is doing this all the time, where he's bringing people together that nobody felt like he should be spending time with.
Hey, it's Scott, and welcome to Theology Lab. My guests for this episode are involved in politics in different ways. Lonnie Chen served in the George W. Bush administration. He was the chief policy advisor for Mitt Romney's 2012 presidential campaign, and he's currently a fellow at the Hoover Institution. Ian Wong serves as the city manager of Cambridge, Massachusetts. They have different approaches to politics, but they're also committed Christians and committed to their friendship. My interview gets into how they handle conflict that's internal to their work. For Ian, this involves things like engaging with the protests and protesters in his city. For Lonnie, it has to do with changes that have happened recently in the conservative movement. It also looks at how their faith and friendship have provided them a way to navigate relationships and politics differently. Thanks for listening to Theology Lab. Our podcast interviews are available on our YouTube channel, and you can get more of them once they're released by subscribing or following the Theology Lab podcast. Here's the interview with Lonnie Chen and Ian Wong. Tell us just a little bit about your personal journey into politics and then how faith has played a role in shaping your politics.
I'll just say, I guess it's a long story, so I don't want to belabor the point. You know, my parents immigrated to the U.S. from Taiwan in the 1970s. And from a very early age, I remember them sort of reinforcing for me how remarkable and exceptional of a place America is. And they always had hoped that I would give back in some way. And so for me, being interested in politics, being interested in public service is something that goes back a long way. And it's something that I personally took an interest in. I mean, I remember watching a debate, presidential debate, actually in 1988 between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis. I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, it would be really fun to be involved in that whole thing someday. And, you know, I've been very blessed to have had the opportunity to advise presidential candidates, to serve in presidential administrations, to do work that I have found really fulfilling. And I think that, you know, for me, it's always been kind of something I expected I would do at some point, and something I continue to do. But in terms of my faith journey and how it intersects with politics, you know, I became a Christian relatively later in life, actually. You know, I came to faith when I was in my mid-late 20s, I would say. And so for me, at least, it's been interesting because my interest in politics sort of predated knowing God. And so putting it all together for me has been really challenging at times. It's been really illuminating. It's been really clear how God's hand has been on so many of the things that I've had an opportunity to do in my life. And I would just say sort of two things about my view of politics and how faith has informed it. That the first thing is that the way in which God has a plan that so surpasses our understanding or our own wishes for who might win an election, or what might become of a particular political situation. And God has a way of redeeming even things that look like failure in politics. And I've experienced a lot of failure, personal failure, failure of people I've served and been around. You know, failure is a part of being in politics. And those failures are very public. People can see them. But I think that having a faith in God has allowed me to kind of be able to process those things, I think, in a way. And the second thing I would just say is politics and government cannot save us. Only God can. OK, like, it's very easy in our day and age for people to look to politics as a savior. And we see it all the time. I mean, if you turn on the television or you follow social media, even some of our fellow Christians, I think, confuse this notion of, you know, who it is and what it is that can save us. And I think that is a great reassurance to me as I've gone through a lot of political cycles and a lot of political outcomes that have just been very hard. Only God can.
Lonnie, thank you for sharing that. Ian, how about you?
No, so good to be with you all. And I sort of love this, sort of treasure this time to spend with Lonnie too after so many years. I think I'm definitely newer to kind of this political world. And so a lot of my journey was trying to find how to just make a difference in the world. And in college, I ended up really getting involved in a lot of global health efforts. And that was where I started. Post college, did a lot of work in global health. Lived in Kenya for about a year, working with a couple of global health organizations. And a lot of my journey has been, I think, becoming more and more local. And so moved back to the U.S. And ended up at Boston Medical Center for the last 10 years. And I think there was such a richness in seeing that institution turn around. So Boston Medical Center is the largest state-tenant hospital in the Boston area, and when I joined, was really on this path to failure. Was really struggling as an institution. And if you're sort of in the Boston area and you're reading the news, BMC has been on this incredible journey, turned around operationally, and is now actually in the business of saving other safety-net hospitals. And so BMC actually recently took over a couple of hospitals, St. Elizabeth's, and then Good Sam in Brockton. And is now part of that effort to strengthen the safety net. And I think there was just an experience of more of how these public institutions can do good in the world. And I think that's what really fed my soul. And I was looking in my own community, and in Cambridge, the city manager who basically is hired to run the city and reports to the city council. The city manager position opened up in 2022, and it had been a role that had been played by the same set of folks for the last 40 or 50 years. This is the first time that they were really looking for an outside candidate. And I put my hat in the ring, I put my name in the hat and went through this interview process and ended up in this role where suddenly I've become much more enmeshed in local politics. And it's been an exciting 2 years. I feel like there has been a deep element of faith kind of integrated in that whole journey. I think the just act of getting involved was a big leap of faith to get into public service. I think that was something that I ended up getting into with a little bit of trepidation. But I also feel like there was this view as I was looking out where trust in institutions, trust in government is right now just at such a low point. And I think it excited me to get involved and to say, what does it look like to be in deeper relationship with people? What does it look like to run local government in a way that's more transparent? How do we bring some of that operational sort of get things done nature of the work that I saw at BMC that went really well into local government. And so those were a lot of the things that I think led me here. And I think certainly in the last couple of years, it's been quite the journey through a number of just, local government's always dealing with really difficult issues, but seeing how much I think faith has strengthened me and sort of brought me the courage to do the right thing and also think about people in a different way than I think you sometimes see when you watch MSNBC or Fox News or just like talk radio.
Let me go to a question. I want to kind of ask you for brief responses to this because we've got a bunch of other things we want to get into. But you are not like two people who were, running for the same office and then found out, oh yeah, hey, you're a Christian, you're a Christian. It's different, right? You were in a small group together years ago back in Boston, and now we're having a conversation about navigating political differences. Let me just get your thoughts on what do you think, beginning with a friendship can offer as you start to talk about and get into politics or political differences?
I mean, I feel like we really came together, to form spiritual community. We were in a small group together. It was this, I think, really intense time, I think particularly in Lonnie's life, but we all had very young kids. There was a sense of how we were forming families together, and then also managing busy lives. I mean, I feel like there was a deep sense, I think in particular in our relationship, where there was a desire to be investing in each other spiritually. And that was kind of the goal of why we were getting together. I think I felt a lot of, and I still feel a sense of treasuring the relationship. I mean, I feel like what was interesting about the small group is a small group in Boston. So, you know, I feel like Lonnie kind of invited us all in. It was a bunch of essentially like Obama supporters. And meanwhile, he's running, working like 90, 100 hours a week on the, you know, 2012 Romney campaign. And I think there was a real generosity to be in relationship, to be investing in each other spiritually. It kind of was a foundation for saying, you know, there's more to our lives than the political goals that we might be pursuing, even though those are really important to us. I mean, so important that so much is being invested.
So Lonnie, what would make you invite a whole group of Obama supporters into a small group when you were working for Mitt Romney?
I mean, look, when you live in Cambridge, like you don't, like, do you have much of a choice at that point? You know, I mean, it was a really interesting time because I was so, you know, my family and I were so busy. I mean, life was very full for us. We had had our son had been born a couple of years before. You know, my wife had made the decision to take some time away from the workplace to be with him, particularly because of how busy my schedule was at the time. And so I think starting with a friendship, but not just a friendship, but one that was really rooted in, I think Yeon's right, really spiritual care for one another, I think made the situation a little bit unusual in the sense that you're not really focused so much. And it was just strange to sound because I was so involved in politics at the time. You're not really focused on the political differences, really. I mean, you sort of acknowledge and recognize that there are different points of view and that on issues there will be disagreement, but you assume a certain level of respect, I suppose, but also a certain level of agreement in terms of your basic values and the basic things that you're using to guide your decisions. And by values, I don't mean it in the politicized way that it's discussed now. I really mean it in terms of like, what is your ultimate priority and how are you serving God through what you're doing? And I think that it did make our conversations and our friendship and also then by definition, our political differences just didn't really seem all that significant, right? Because by contrast, you're talking about things that are, I don't know, it's strange for me to say, but just felt much more central to my life than my work at that time.
Yeah, and I can see how like the intimacy of that also gives kind of this basic trust where, you know, if you do enter into those harder conversations, you can do it knowing the other person's entering into in good faith.
Yes.
So drawing on your experiences and political context, I'm wondering if you could share about a time when you experienced kind of pushback or resistance from either a person or a group who disagreed with you on an issue or a decision that you made. What was the issue and how do you think kind of faith plays a role in such a situation? How it can form the way that we respond or at least ideally would like to respond?
Well, I've experienced a lot of pushback on any number of different, you know, issues, and usually it stems from you know, statements that I've made in public or you know, positions I've had to take by virtue of being a candidate for public office. I mean, there's a lot of things that you have to address during that period of time. And I'll say that the interesting thing in recent years has been the I guess we call it the conservative movement. The conservative movement has changed a lot since I was a kid. And especially over the last couple of years, there have been a lot of difficult conversations that have happened, I think, amongst people who previously probably would have agreed on most issues. And I think that in particular, over the last couple of years, I have found some of those conversations to be the most challenging, actually, because you kind of expect that if you're of a different party from someone, or let's say you have a different philosophical view about the role of government. I used to do, I still do, a lot of work in healthcare, which is one of the ways that Ian and I kind of bonded initially. But I think in that area you find there are a lot of clear disagreements, I would say, between progressives and self-identified conservatives about the future of the American healthcare system. Like, that's a fairly easy one where you're navigating the same issues all the time. And I would say that recently the challenges around what's happening, I would say, in the conservative political movement, that has, for me at least, been the biggest challenge. And I would say it's two challenges. One is not just articulating differences in point of view, but also because frequently you are probably in a situation where you, at least on paper, share faith with the people with whom you disagree. And so that creates its own, I would say, set of challenges. And how I try to navigate that space is by reminding people of that shared faith and what it means. Some of the things I talked about earlier about politics not being our savior, and about the degree to which God's will be done regardless of what we may want as human beings. And I think that addressing and approaching it from that perspective and point of view has probably been the best and easiest way to navigate some of those challenges.
Maybe this works out really well. Lonnie kind of can speak a little bit to like what's happening on the right. I would say like the hardest thing I ended up managing was very early on when I came into this role. We ended up having a police killing. So the police ended up shooting and killing a young man of color in Cambridge, and you can sort of just see like that tragedy deeply, deeply affected the community. We had months of protests at City Hall. We had a whole lot of people who were just incredibly upset at how this could have happened, especially in sort of this community. I remember there was sort of this moment where ultimately, the protesters were sort of building steam, and we said, "Look, let's meet together and have a conversation." And I do think there is a real element of, in these moments, I feel like there's a continued reminder that we're all children of God, and to view whether it's your political allies or your political opponents, to really see people as people that you want to know, you want to understand. And we ended up sitting in a room together, and it was a little bit difficult to even just negotiate, like, how are we going to meet? Am I getting ambushed? Is this just going to be a different kind of protest? But we finally sort of arranged sort of a neutral space where we sat in a room together, and I said, "Look, if you want to play a role in police reform, there's an open invitation. We can talk about it. The things that we have already committed to doing, here's the list. Talk to us and tell us, how you want to be involved." And I think what was both surprising and also, just part of what we have to recognize is in our political world now, is they looked at me and they said, "We're not interested in that. Like, we're not here to set policy. We're here to build a movement. And we're not looking to like join a board or a commission to help you work on police reform, because that's not going to help our movement." And I remember being like a little taken aback, because everything that it appeared that they were really engaged and wanted to make a difference in the world. But I do think it was a sign of some of the difficult dynamics that are just at play on both the left and the right, where people sometimes are a little distant from actually wanting to engage in the hard work of how to make a difference, to find that consensus, to make incremental progress. And I think on both sides, we see a bit of this sense of like, we just need to burn it all down, and then we'll go from there. And I feel that tension as somebody that now exists in that structure and is trying to convince people, despite a lot of the challenges that we're facing, that we can make progress, that there's ways that we can move forward that will make progress on all of these issues. But that's a really difficult conversation.
I want to just kind of say back something that I've heard from both of you. It's interesting that how your faith puts you in a posture, whether it's of seeing the image of God in other people or the sense of just wanting God's will to be done, where then you are open to listening to people who disagree with you. I heard that both in both of your answers. So just want to say, I see that, I affirm that. I want to go on to a topic of how do we engage in things that are hard and there's not obstacles going forward. I know that, Lonnie, I know that you have something you're going to speak to on this, but Eon, actually, I wonder if we can stay with that situation when you talk about making progress, because that is such a one. I just appreciate you being willing to share about this, the situation where you listened, you then put an invitation out there about what progress can look like and then hit a stumbling block again. But yet you've continue on in your role. You've continued on in trying to make a way forward here. When you're talking about politics, when you're in relationships, when it's just very difficult to see how do we move forward? It feels like there's not a way forward. What can we do? I wonder if you have any input on that and maybe what that situation was like for you.
It's hard. I mean, I think I would say a couple of thoughts. I think first is, I really, now that I'm very close, so I'm in an appointed position. So essentially in Cambridge, there's a 9-person elected city council. They hire a city manager. But in its own way, as I've been close to the politicians, I have grown a deep empathy for how difficult it is to run for office, to put yourself out there, to be, to be managing just that really difficult dynamic of going out and trying to convince everybody that, you're on their side, you deserve their vote in sort of these 10-second snippets. And as I've gotten to know the city councilors, everybody is there for really great reasons. They want to make a difference. I've been a little bit blessed in the sense that because I'm in that apolitical role, I think I don't have to have as difficult a conversation. And so in many ways, a lot of times when I'm interacting with stakeholders, advocates, residents that are upset, or even counselors, I feel like I'm often trying to understand them. I'm trying to hear where they're coming from. There's usually something real there, whatever the issue is. There is some pain that's being expressed that is real and that we can affirm. And then I feel like I'm trying to then draw in, well, what do we actually know, right? What is some of the information about the different ways that we're thinking about tackling that issue, to try to contextualize it and to also try to bring in, I think what's beautiful about Cambridge is it's driven by consensus. And so in some ways I can just highlight, well, this is where you're at. This is where another 3 counselors I think are at. And they're coming from good places too. You're in relationship with them. And it does create a conversation that's a little bit toned down, because it's not a fight. It's not a fight between who's right and who's wrong. There's a sense of, there are good people who have come, who have come from different points of pain and are now ending up in different places. And how do we explain that? And how do we move forward in terms of either? And I sort of end up framing this very much to the council a lot of times to say, we got 2 options. One option is, we actually get people together on this issue. We work out some sense of consensus, and we can help you do that to say, these are ways you can compromise, where we agree, where we disagree. Maybe we can actually find something that we all agree on. We move forward together. That's one option. Option 2 is, if you think you can get to 5 votes, you can do whatever you want. And that's the system of government that we have. So if you want to try to win this fight, you can convince a majority of the council to be behind you, then that's the direction we'll go in. But just the caution is, if you're only on that slim 5-4, the winds blow a different direction on the election, the next election, then we're all the way back. And so that's often also the framing to say, that consensus-driven approach, it is more powerful and sustainable in the long run, because then we're not fighting this fight every single time. And we've seen, in Cambridge, we've seen the council go back and forth on bike lanes where they're just fighting that fight 5-4. And we've seen them come to consensus on something like climate change, where, everybody ended up coming to a pretty good compromise and moving forward together. But I feel like that's at least a sense of how we're trying to just have a deeper conversation, and not just be, throwing food at each other.
Yeah. Over. something I heard you say twice there, Ian, is that entering into these kinds of conversations and saying and listening and saying, is there pain being expressed here? As is probably a really helpful way to us kind of make progress in situations that don't seem like they have an easy way forward. Lonnie, take us more into a political context and kind of in your own political party and situations where you're dealing with, you know, things that just don't have easy way forwards, obstacles. How do you deal with them?
Well, let me just say, first of all, that the problems that Ian has to deal with are far, far more challenging than any of the problems I've had to deal with in a lot of ways. And I will say that local politics is extremely difficult. And it's extremely difficult because it's in your face all the time. You know, when I ran for statewide office in California, I ran to be the controller of the state of California, which is our chief fiscal officer and essentially the CFO of the state. And, you know, that's great, except like no one knows who the controller of California is and no one really cares. People know and care who their city manager is. They do, because it's very impactful to their lives. And I would guess that Ian and his lovely family cannot go to Whole Foods or anywhere else without someone stopping him to complain about something, right? Like, I didn't have to deal with that when I ran. I mean, yes, I ran publicly and there was a lot of stuff that comes with running for office, of course, but it's so different when it's local and it's in your face all of the time. And that's why I would never run for local. I would not be able to do it. I think, I don't know that I have the stomach for it. Because it is so incredibly challenging, and it's so admirable that he's doing what he's doing, because it's a huge imposition on you personally. It's a huge imposition on your family as well. So, listen, I think that the biggest elephant in the room, not to use a kind of to mix metaphors, is Donald Trump. Right. And just by me saying that, I know half the people on this call are like, click, I'm done. We're not going to have another conversation about that. Everyone has an opinion. Like, no one has, I don't really know how I feel about the guy. Like, everybody instantly, when you say that name, probably unlike any other name in the history of our recent politics, would you get such a strong reaction one way or another. For most people, I would say they have an instant reaction. And I think that for me, that has been the single biggest challenge of the last, I was thinking today, actually, it's been about a decade, that roughly maybe a little less than a decade, but it feels like a century, that we've had to deal with this question of how one feels about Trump. And I think that those conversations, I've had all sorts of range of those conversations with people who deeply dislike him to people who admire him more than you will ever know. And it is, it's interesting, because recently how I've tried to kind of bridge this gap a little bit is by using some basic kind of faith principles to address these oftentimes difficult and contentious situations where you may find yourself in the middle of conversation where you've got two people who disagree very much. And I invariably, you know, do feel caught in the middle a little bit sometimes on this, because, you know, I try to assess it from the point of view of like, are there parts of this conversation that I would agree with and parts I would disagree with? Are there things that he has done or said that I would agree with or disagree with? And that tends not to be, I would say, how most people approach this, not saying it's right or wrong. But for me, at least, it is about trying to model certain characteristics of how I think we as Christians are called to participate in these public discussions. And you mentioned listening, and I think listening is really important. Stopping and saying, you know, why? What are you saying? Why are you saying it? I want to affirm, not necessarily that I agree with you, but I want to affirm where you're feeling, where you're coming from. And then trying to figure out, is there a way in that listening to then sort of say, how can I bring this Jesus-centered approach, let's say, to this disagreement or to this policy discussion or to this conversation about Trump, right? And it's hard, because oftentimes people have very strong feelings, and interestingly enough, I think feelings and faith can be a challenge sometimes. And so I guess I would just say that for my part, what I always try to do is to not assume worst intentions, to listen and to try and bring a little bit of a broader understanding about the context or about understanding why someone may feel the way they feel, understanding that they have their own lived experience that will result in a certain kind of conclusion. And those are all the factors that I try to bring into it. But it's been a very kind of uniquely challenging time, particularly for those of us who maybe haven't taken the party line, so to speak, the whole way through. I think that's presented a little bit of a challenge.
Let me put one more question out there from me, and then I'm going to go to the audience for a Q&A. Ian, I'll start with you with this. Just as you think about people of Christian faith and politics, what would you hope to see more of? What kind of engagement would you like to see as people try to bring their faith into the political realm in a way that could inform just who they are, the values they bring, what they care about? What are your hopes, Ian?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think one is, I think, being able to hold on to things that may feel contradictory, being able to hold a lot of tension, I think, in our souls. I would sort of reflect that I think it's a very American and a very American way of viewing the world that there's heroes and villains, and it doesn't do our politics very good. But I feel like that's how we write our movies. That's how we write our stories. It's how I certainly felt like that was in my head growing up. There's the good guy and there's the bad guy. And I think that's only been exacerbated by sort of where politics has kind of led us. But in the real world, I think we live in many more shades of gray than that. And I think as we talk about Trump or political disagreements, I think there is that tension that we need to be able to live with, where there may be somebody that you're in relationship with, you're in church with, you're in family with, and is it possible to love that person in front of you, have a relationship with them, and yet also disagree with them about something that is incredibly important to you and them? And I think that tension, which just feels so deeply uncomfortable, I think it's to welcome that discomfort and to feel like that's part of life and that's okay. When I think sometimes we feel that discomfort and we think we've got to get away from it. And it essentially, then we get stuck, right? We're either then saying, I can't be in relationship with you, or one of us has got to change their minds. And it may be the case that you can live with that for longer, and maybe that's the process. And you see that, right? That you see that in the Gospels, where Jesus is doing this all the time, where he's bringing people together that nobody felt like he should be spending time with. And I think the second thing might be just holding on to what the stakes actually are. You know, I think Lonnie and me, I mean, we're both basically spending our jobs with the idea that government matters and politics matters. And yet, you know, sometimes I reflect to the Gospels and I think, well, what does Jesus have to say about my job or my role? And I'm like, I don't think he spends a lot of time in the Gospels talking about what you do once you've gotten hold of power in government. It just wasn't really something he was thinking about. And I think there is something also about the stakes are high, but they're not as high as the kingdom, and that we have a lot in our identities, a lot that we need to recognize is much, much more important than even the political fights that might consume most of our waking hours. And that's something that I think actually has given me a lot of courage and also a lot of comfort when things are really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with a lot of what Ian said. I mean, I think that, you know, particularly I think if your day to day is very much infused with politics or with the current system, you know, there is a tendency to think a lot about how impactful a particular decision or a particular disagreement is. But I don't think that Jesus has a strong opinion about the optimal corporate tax rate, right? I'm pretty sure he doesn't actually really care what it is that what regulatory provision comes in to determine whether we have more or less competitive marketplaces in healthcare. He probably doesn't have a strong point of view on that. But I do think that he has a relatively strong point of view about how we relate to one another as brothers and sisters in Christ, but also with those who don't believe or who maybe seeking belief. And I think that that's going to be a much more impactful reflection than anything we probably would do in our respective political or policy positions, right? I mean, frankly, I think on the day of judgment, I'm pretty sure that actually that it is about how we've related to other people, and that's going to be the more important question. And so, you just try to keep that in mind, I think. And I totally agree with the idea of being able to hold some form of political or policy disagreement in tension, and to be in community with and to have relationship with people with whom you may have very significant disagreements about even very fundamental questions about what our government is or isn't doing, for example, or what leader should or should not be elected. I actually think that that's probably pretty healthy for us in a lot of ways.
I'm going to shift us over now to some questions from the audience. So someone is asking, are there times where you specifically avoid talking politics in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I avoid talking about it sometimes because I'm just sick of talking about it. I mean, invariably, I think people will, because of what I do, or maybe because of something they've heard me say, that's what they'll want to talk about. And I understand that, and that's okay. But I do sometimes want to navigate away from that conversation if I can. And I think that's okay, actually. I mean, I think there's a people know where folks are coming from, and that's good. I think people should be able to express their points of view on that. But I certainly try to be, I do try to be discerning sometimes when I go into a conversation where, I know there probably are some disagreements, or there are probably some things that are pretty fundamental, to not like go and deliberately grab the third rail. I sort of will try and again, it's about forming areas of commonality, or forming areas of agreement, or trying to figure out how does our lived experience similar to one another, and how can we relate as human beings.
I mean, I think I'm pretty extroverted, so I feel like I tend to be pretty willing to kind of talk about most things. I mean, I feel like I have become a little more discerning in terms of whether these are real conversations or not. Sometimes I'm having real conversations, at Whole Foods where somebody's trying to get a better understanding of what's happening in the city, and I'm always really game for that. I think sometimes, there's somebody who's not really listening and just trying to corner you or trap you or make a point. I think if somebody's waving a phone in your face, it's not a real conversation. And I think I remember even having a bit of interaction with someone where, it was actually like it was one of these conversations with a set of protesters, and they said, "Hey, if you want to talk to us, why don't you come out and talk to all of us?" And I was like, I don't think what you're looking for is a real conversation. So I don't think that's a great idea for us to sort of engage in. So I think it's a bit more about how you're coming in and sort of what it really is. But always open to kind of hear people and try to understand what they're, what is it that they're trying to express. I feel like that's always been really rewarding for me.
This is a difficult question. Do your best with it, right? So politics and government has a lot of power and coercion, and in our political discourse today, we see a lot of selfishness. How do you enter into that world, bringing Christian values of non-coercion, of self-denial, of self-giving love? Do you ever find those just kind of coming into like real conflict where you wonder, how do I proceed faithfully in my work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel, and I think maybe this is good. Maybe I should quit if I ever feel really comfortable with power. You know, I think it makes me suspicious to feel like there is always a concentration of power in any organization. I think what I've tried to do is I think about, you know, how the city of Cambridge makes decisions. I think part of it, what I appreciate, is that there is actually a very shared power structure. And so as much as I think I have a lot of authority or influence, a lot of what I do is actually try to find the center of the city council. And so, you know, there are real limits where, especially as I'm trying to navigate the politically difficult decisions, I'm thinking about, you know, how do I communicate and get support from 5 or 6 city councilors. And so there's a real check in terms of how far I can go in terms, you know, on any sort of policy or implementation or decision. And then I think, so that's sort of like on the governance side with the council. And then on the staff side, you know, a lot of what I try to do is create consensus among a lot of my department heads. And I think people sometimes don't quite realize how many people are involved in decisions. But I really try to figure out, you know, how do I make sure that my department heads understand that they have a voice and their opinion really matters to me. And if they think something's a terrible idea, then like we need to do more work and we need to find a better answer, something that they think long-term is good for the city and for the community, and something that we ultimately can sell to the politicians. That they believe these are sort of the values and priorities that they want to that they were elected to sort of pursue. But I think I've tried to, and maybe that is very gospel centric, sort of the suspicion of power. But I've tried to really both organize that so we can still like make decisions. Like we've got to be able to move forward, but to try to find out how we actually have so many other people that are buying into that before we bake something.
Lonnie, how about you?
I mean, it's funny because I was just reflecting on how important I think community and the relationships we have are important in keeping us centered when we enter into areas that are challenging. And I certainly think that politics and government can be challenging for the reasons, Scott, that you've illustrated, but also because of the fact that, you know, we're just in a very fraught time, I think. And so for me, I've been very blessed to be in relationship with people who I trust, who are able to hold me accountable. And I think that that's very important. I think both Ian and I are blessed with the spouses that we need in that regard. I know for me, that's hugely important. You know, I think that my wife will never hesitate to tell me when she thinks I'm being a knucklehead, to use a term that's become very popular this week. And I, you know, I'm cool with that. I think that's actually really important to be able to have people around you who can be watchful for you, because, you know, we are not meant to address these challenges alone. I don't think that's what God, I don't think these are tests, right? I don't think God is like intentionally trying to test us, right? I think he gives us all of the things we need to handle the challenges he puts before us. And I'm a big believer in the value of friendships and of relationships and of people around you who can really help to put things in perspective, you know. And I think my kids are great for that too, because they remind me that absolutely nothing I work on is meaningful to them. Because the things that are meaningful to them are like, you know, not anywhere near the political or policy environment that we swim in. So it's an admission of weakness is really, you know, what it is. It's my own weakness, it's our own weakness as human beings. And it's natural to be, to feel temptation, and it's the sort of sin that lives within all of us, I think, that can be drawn toward that. And I think we have to be actively remembering that about who we are and seeking support. And that's what I try to do.
What do you say to someone who says that they won't vote because they disagree with both candidates?
I mean, you know, that's like a lot of, I feel like that's a decent number of people in America, right? I mean, or at least at some point this year, that probably has been. I mean, I think that your vote is a very precious thing. And so for me, at least, it is a very, very important form of expression, but it's also a very, very important responsibility. I'm not in the business of telling someone what they should or shouldn't do, but I really believe in framing it in that way, which is that it is a fundamental responsibility of being a citizen of this country. And I totally get like not feeling at home with either of the candidates or any of the options you may have in a particular race, but I tend not to think that that absolves you of the responsibility that you've been given.
Yeah, I mean, I think the deeper challenge is, you know, if you're one raindrop in the storm, does it feel like you have any impact, whether you fall in one place or another? It sort of doesn't, right? Except that it does, because the whole storm is made up of raindrops. And so I think it's a deeper sense then of, you know, your vote actually does matter. Well, the Electoral College, you know, what state you live in, but let's pretend you live in a state that matters. Your vote does matter, you know? And I think that is more the issue. I mean, this is sort of the challenge in our democracy. I mean, you live in Massachusetts, does it matter if you vote in the presidential election? Yes, it does. It's your civic duty. In reality, I don't think any of us could convince anybody that it actually matters to the outcome. But I think for folks who like live in Wisconsin and who are saying, you know, it doesn't really matter, I feel like there is a sense of, you know, it does matter. These are really consequential decisions, especially this year. And you know, your vote makes a big difference. And you know, there's a lot of people who don't live in Wisconsin who wish they did. So.
Again, I want to thank you both for coming and just being open and willing to have a conversation. You've named some areas where there is disagreement. You've given us a lot to think about in terms of how do you enter into hard conversations, particularly around politics, in a way where you can be open to others and even things to look for in those conversations. I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that. And then you've spoken to how your faith informs all of these things and is the highest priority in guiding you in your life in politics. So thank you for sharing that with us. I think it's been a real witness and testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Scott. Thanks, Bonnie.